Well, welcome. I'm Dick Spotswood, politics and government columnist for the Marin Independent Journal. It is a privilege and a delight to be the moderator of tonight's debate, sponsored by the Coalition of Sensible Taxpayers of Marin County. And Mimi Willer, our president, is here, and she and I will be talking to two of the three candidates who are running for the first district seat in the Board of Supervisors. The first district seat, by the way, supervisor is elected for a four-year term by districts. The first district encompasses the city of San Rafael and some unincorporated areas north of San Rafael, from Lucas Valley, Sun Valley, San Benicia, Terra Linda. The northern portions of San Rafael are in the first district. There's an incumbent, and the incumbent supervisor is Damon Connolly. He's been on the board for some years, but he is not running for re-election. He is running for the California State Assembly. So these candidates have stood up and said, yeah, I'm going to run for the Board of Supervisors for the four-year term, representing my fellow people who live in this district. And Gina Daly, Mary Sackett are with us tonight. Thank you very much for attending. George Sorolobus is a candidate. He has written to Cost saying he was unable to attend this online forum. Let me tell you the ground rules that we're going to do tonight, and they're pretty simple. We're going to really respect going back and forth alphabetically, so each candidate will have a chance to be the first, and then the other the second, and back and forth to each question. To start off, to tell you who they are and what they're about, they'll do it themselves. Each of the candidates, starting with Gina Daly, will give you 3 minutes on their background, why they're qualified to be elected as your representative on the Board of Supervisors. By the way, the Board of Supervisors is county government for the unincorporated areas of Marin County and performs functions for the incorporated areas, San Rafael, Mill Valley, Novato, the 11 cities of Marin County. But quite differently, the Board of Supervisors governs planning and all sorts of things that that city councilmen normally would provide in unincorporated areas. So if you live in Strawberry, the supervisor is effectively your city council member. After we do the 3 minutes each of introductions, each of them, reverse order, will have a chance to tell you why they're running for supervisor. What's their platform? What's their theory behind their candidacy?
And we have
4 minutes to tell you that, and then we'll go into Q&A, questions and answers. We want you, residents of Marin County, who have taken the time and care enough to call and chat with us by using the chat feature on your screen. Ask your question there. If you want your name mentioned,
I need to interrupt, please, to take care of the housekeeping.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry about that. First of all, just want to thank everyone for joining us tonight, and also Dick for being our moderator. And we are just really thrilled to have everybody here at this voter education event, because we just think it's so important for voters to be educated, and it's a key part of our mission. And so I just want to, before we get into this, to make sure that everybody knows about our housekeeping here. First of all, this event is being recorded, and if you want to go back and find the video or refer voters to the video, it will be available within 24 to 48 hours at our website, costmarin.org, and there is a link to videos there, which you see on your screen. And also there is closed captioning here, which you can find at the bottom of your Zoom screen to click on that. And most importantly, we are not using the chat function tonight. We are using the Q&A, and you'll see an icon at the bottom of the screen to enter any questions that you have. And I will be scrolling through those and finding those questions and posing them as they come up, and kind of alternating a bit with Dick so that we keep it a lively conversation. So with that, I am going to turn it back over to Dick, and he can moderate.
Well, the idea again is 3 minutes to tell us about yourself, followed by 4 minutes on what your platform is, and then we go with the Q&A. And we'll take turns. Each of you will have an option to do it. The answering time for each question, 1 minute. At 1 minute, 30 seconds, we'll hard cut off, so you can go over a little bit. But at a minute 30, we will say, thank you, and stop and go to the next person, and then go back and forth. We, once again, using the Q&A function, not the chat function, thank you, Mimi, we ask our viewers to give us their thoughts on their questions. Mimi will then handle those questions and ask them on your behalf. I'll be asking some questions that, as Mimi said, cost members have sent in, the public has sent in, I've written, or just seem kind of obvious to when we organize this program. Let's ask them this. So that's the function. When we finish, minute and a half for each of you to give us a summation why we should vote for you as a candidate for the Board of Supervisors. Those are the ground rules. They're pretty basic. We've done them many times in Marin County. It's traditional, and now the traditional start. Alphabetically, we start with Gina Daly.
All right. Well, thanks so much to everyone from COST. And Dick, thank you for moderating the discussion tonight. I'm Gina Daly. I'm running for Marin County Supervisor District 1. And I'm running because the past 2 years have shown us that today's challenges require fresh ideas, a willingness to ask new questions, and the capacity to discover opportunities in our challenges. I want to serve as your next Board of Supervisor because I love this community. My husband, Kieran, grew up in Lucas Valley, and we moved here 8 years ago, which was as soon as we could afford a house. As soon as we moved here, I got involved at the local level, becoming president of the Terra Linda Homeowners Association. And I served on San Rafael's Wildfire Prevention Committee, which was formed following the devastating Paradise Fire. We wanted to make sure that we would not be the next Paradise, and I'm really proud of the work we did on that committee. As a trustee for the San Rafael School Board, I've seen firsthand the impact of the pandemic on our children. I've worked tirelessly to address learning loss and mental health challenges. But what I've also learned is that the issues facing our children don't only exist in the classroom. Issues of affordable housing, food insecurity, climate change, and equity are all bigger than what happens in our schools, and they necessitate action at the county level. As the mom of a five-year-old and three-year-old, and you can probably see their artwork in the background, I am deeply concerned about the future of our children and the generations that follow them. I want to be able to show tangible progress on the issues facing our county by the time my kids are in high school. These issues that we're facing are not unique to our community or even to California. Every place is trying to solve them, but in a siloed way. I can help break down those barriers by leveraging my 20 years of professional experience at the federal and state level. I spent most of my 20s working for Senator Dianne Feinstein, first in Washington, D.C., and then in San Francisco as her director for Northern California. And for the past decade, I've advocated for our students and researchers at UC Berkeley in my job as their federal lobbyist. I also have a graduate degree in public policy from UC Berkeley, which enables me to do extensive budgetary and policy analysis and ensure that our public funds are used appropriately and with transparency. Through this experience, I can bring additional federal and state resources to the county and work collaboratively with others to make durable solutions. We need leaders with a breadth of experience and the political courage to make lasting change. We cannot do the same thing again and again and expect a different result. It just won't happen. I'm proud to have the support of my former boss, Senator Dianne Feinstein, former mayor of San Rafael, Gary Phillips, Council Member Mary Beth Bushy, most of the Miller Creek School Board, and all of my colleagues on the San Rafael School Board. I'm endorsed by the Sierra Club, the Marin Professional Firefighters, among many other organizations. I encourage you to look at my website for more information. It would be my honor to serve our community full-time as a Board of Supervisor. The opportunity to serve the community I love while my kids grow up is why I'm so thankful for the chance to represent Marin County. Thank you for having me here tonight, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Gina. Mary, tell us in 3 minutes your qualifications for the Marin County Board of Supervisors.
Thank you so much for the opportunity and for COST for putting on this forum. I always respect and appreciate the perspective that COST brings to us each and every day at the Board of Supervisors, really doing the research and getting the work done. I am running for county supervisor because I care about this community and have worked in this community for the past 20 years. My background is I have an undergraduate degree in geography and biophysical systems, which really poises me in order to be able to understand the complex land use issues that come before the Board of Supervisors. I then went to law school and am licensed to practice law in 3 states and litigated cases throughout Northern California for 13 years with a small law firm in Tiburon. Most importantly, the experience that I bring to this role is that I have worked for our current county supervisor, Damon Connolly, who I'm hoping to succeed, for the past 5 years. I've been in this county working with District 1 residents every single day, meeting with homeowners, meeting with renters, working through issues from the big and grand climate issues that we face to tree issues, sidewalk issues, pump station issues, which we really are facing more and more every day with our aging infrastructure. I bring to this role that experience and those, most importantly, those relationships. I've worked and done a lot of community service in this county with a number of agencies, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, a lot of environmental work through All One Ocean and other organizations, through our local schools, Safe Routes to Schools, including serving on nonprofit boards. But most importantly, all of that work, much of it started with San Rafael Harbor Rotary, where we focus all of our projects on the San Rafael Canal area. And most importantly, I bring the relationships that I've formed with people. I really appreciate, you know, having long-term relationships in this county that I can fall back on. We may not always agree, but I'm always open and willing to sit down and have a cup of coffee and work through some issues with folks and walk away with respect. So I would love to bring my experience and my time to the role of District 1 supervisor serving the greater San Rafael area. Thank you.
Well, thank you indeed, Mary. Let's now, Gina and Mary, the opportunity for you to tell the viewers your platform. What are the issues? What are you running on? What's your number one thing you're going to do if elected? Why are you running for the Marin County Board of Supervisors in the November election? And since we started off with Gina out there, let's start with Mary.
Dick, this is strange, but could I ask Gina to start? I'm having a computer glitch at the moment.
Well, of all the people you could find in the world that understands computer glitches, and what it goes through.
Screen is not.
You've got the right person.
Okay.
Gina, 4 minutes to start off with. And then when Gina finishes, Mary, you'll have your 4 minutes. Fair enough?
Fair enough. And it should be said, Mary and I are friends. So of course, we can go back and forth. Okay, so 4 minutes to talk about my platform and what I'm hoping to do. The issues that I really see as the priorities in the role of supervisor are around climate change, housing, homelessness, and economic recovery post-COVID. So taking each of them, and I should say, really what I bring to this role is not only a wealth of experience at all levels of government. I've done a lot at the local level, but also professionally at the state and federal level, but really an outside perspective, a new perspective in Civic Center. And it's actually, I think, really important to be able to question the way that we have always done things. And if you're new, you can actually do that. So, you know, whenever people say, oh, what's the way we've always done that? Someone who is newer to the building can actually say, well, why? Can you explain that to me? And I think that's actually important, especially as we're trying to do big things. On climate change, what I bring to the table is really my extensive network of contacts at UC Berkeley. Part of my job at UC Berkeley is to connect our researchers with policymakers in the hopes that they make better science-based policy. So on issues like water, sea level rise, wildfire, I can tap into some of the leading minds in our country, both at UC Berkeley, but also in my wider network of university contacts, to try to get some new ideas about what we could do to accelerate and try to mitigate against the worst impacts of climate change. Just one example, because this comes up a lot when I talk to voters in the district. I've actually knocked on 2,700 doors in our district so far, and I'm hoping to break 3,000 this weekend if I can take enough time to do it. But the issue of water comes up a lot. Obviously, there's a lot of work that's done at the Municipal Water Board that sets policy, but I think the county can and should play more of a convener role because water impacts all of the other things we're trying to do. If we care about building more housing, we have to care about water and having enough water to be able to do that responsibly. So for example, UC Berkeley has a project right now in Israel where Israel is literally decades ahead of us in water conservation, water supply, because they've had to be. They have had too many people for how much water they have. We should be looking outside of Marin to get some new ideas and bring them home and make them work for Marin. So that's what I bring to the table on issues like climate change. On the issue of housing, what I've seen so much in my role as board trustee on the San Rafael School Board is that it's very difficult to attract new teachers to come to Marin County because they can't afford housing and no one wants to commute 90 minutes to be able to live here. I think we do have to accelerate the amount of workforce housing so that our essential workers, teachers, firefighters, et cetera, are able to live in the community in which they serve. So I do believe we have to do that. We have to do it thoughtfully in making sure that we are keeping in mind all of the potential environmental impacts of building and trying to use infill building as much as possible. But I do think that we owe it to the people that serve us every day for them to be able to live in our community. On the issue of homelessness, this is one that really tugs at my heartstrings. And I know that the city of San Rafael has obviously provided services to the encampment that's in Caltrans property. When I talk to providers on the ground, whether it's Homeward Bound, St. Vincent de Paul, Opening Doors, they've all said similar things, which is there are real gaps in how the county has approached homelessness. And one of the most serious gaps is that we do not operate an interim shelter. And so the people that are now living on the street in Caltrans property, there's nowhere for them to go. And we actually can't move them because of a court decision called Boise. So the county can and should be stepping up to try to shift some of that burden away from individual cities and towns that do not have the resources to provide that and be able to provide that. And the last thing is economic recovery. A lot of people are doing really well post-pandemic in this new endemic phase. A lot of people really are not. And part of what I bring to the table is my master's of public policy. I can do an analysis of all the programs and budgets that we do. So for example, if you have a program that's trying to give rental assistance to low-income people, and that's not working, which is what happened during the rental assistance program, I can help work through those roadblocks and try to find workarounds. That's what I do every single day in my role at UC Berkeley. So I think I may be at 4 minutes.
4 minutes, 42 seconds.
And oh, sorry. Okay. Hopefully Mary's internet issues have been resolved.
And Mary, you have 4 minutes, 42 seconds as well. Mary.
Okay. Alan, can you turn my video back on? Can you see me?
Yes, you're on.
There we go. Okay, great. Thank you. Instability. I'm not sure why that's happening. As Marin County Supervisor, I'll work nonstop on fiscal responsibility, sustainability, and prudent decision-making. I'm going to ensure that resources are allocated to public safety, including fire preparation and preparedness. I've worked with a lot of our community members on evacuation routes and planning, and know that we've made significant progress with the voters. Thank you all for helping pass Measure C, but we have to continue working on it and ensure that our residents know what those evacuation routes are. I think it's also time that we really start building projects on sea level rise. We have C-SMART and Bay Wave, which have studied the issue of sea level rise. And now in this next term, we really need to start those projects. They're not cheap. They're going to be very expensive, but we can't bury our head in the sand as we look to what these, so much of our infrastructure from our sewer water treatment, et cetera, is going to be subject to sea level rise, and we need to keep working on that. I will work tirelessly on creating affordable housing in this county. Again, a tough topic. but something we have to do. And part of that work is to work on planning, preparation, and ensuring that the developers are carrying their share of the infrastructure costs that come with new housing and transportation pressures. I'll work through issues with the community on a regular basis on everything we tackle, not only listening to the loudest voices in the room, because we know that they don't always speak for the residents. Listening to the loudest people in the room doesn't create sound policy. We really have to get out into the community and listen and meet with people in the community, in various neighborhoods, recognizing that many people don't know their way to the Civic Center or know how to ask. So since it is the coalition of sensible taxpayers, I do want to talk a little bit about the county budget. The county received more than $50 million in American Rescue funds. The first tranche of that $25 million was spent on supportive housing, racial equity initiatives, climate change projects, and enhanced emergency response capacity. We'll hear what's going to happen with the next $25 million at the board's budget hearings in June. As I look at these opportunities, I think it's really crucial that we look at what is the best and highest use for these dollars. The situation won't come around very often, or maybe again, where we have the money in the coffers like we haven't in many years past. And so we really need to look at what are the needs of the county and how are we going to sustain those levels of services and infrastructure going forward. It, you know, avoiding things that are going to require long funding streams if we don't think now about how we're going to fund those. And also not creating any new bureaucracy. It's our job to create excellent public service, and that means sustainable programs and being responsible. We have to make sure also that our cities and towns are part of the planning when we look at these dollars. We're not facing climate change and sea level rise and homelessness alone. This is a countywide issue, and we need to work collaboratively with those dollars. I have endorsers in this campaign with almost all of the cities and towns. A lot of elected members, Fairfax, San Anselmo, Ross, San Rafael, that I am proud to not only call colleagues, but also friends. And we need to continue to work together. I was incredibly pleased to see that the county was able to reduce its pension liability and address all the unfunded pension liability in this last cycle, taking advantage of those returns and doubling down to pay off those obligations. I can tell you that as a supervisor's aide for the last 5 years, I have been engaged with our community on a daily basis. And I know what the issues are. I have a different voice than our current supervisor and will do things differently, frankly. But I've learned a great deal about what the issues are that our county faces, and that what comes before the Board of Supervisors is incredibly diverse, from child support services to eggs, waste measures, you know, to transportation funding and policy, public health, and so many other things. I'm in the position to lead Marin County on day one. Thank you.
I'm going to also, because we switched the orders there, I'm going to let you be the first person to answer the first question.
Okay, great.
And the first question relates to public pensions, public employee pensions. Public pension costs are crowding out budget items everywhere with the city and county. What role do you see for the Board of Supervisors infecting pension reform? What reforms would you support? What would you do to break the cycle of above inflation Marin County public employee compensation growth leading to ever higher user fees and taxes? Basically, what would you do to rein in public employee unfunded pension costs? And same question to Gina, by the way. Minute and a half tops.
Yeah, I appreciate the question, Dick. And I think, you know, like few before me could do, I can say that the county has reduced its pension overall pension liability from $601 million to $178 million between 2020 and 2021, addressing the unfunded pension obligations. We still have unfunded liabilities in healthcare, and we need to retiree healthcare, and we need to continue to address those issues. And especially in these times when there is more money, and we need to pay those off. When it comes to the public workforce, this is a much more complex problem, because what we're facing in the county right now is in the county workforce. So the Marin County government workforce is we have a lot of retirees and we have a lot of people leaving the county for various reasons, including the cost of housing here. So we have to stay competitive. I know in our public works department, we're down almost a third of the engineers, and that has ramifications across the county. And so we're looking at a salary comparison to ensure that we aren't losing great staff. I feel very fortunate to work with incredibly smart and dedicated people who could probably make more money in the private sector, but they choose to work in the public sector.
Thanks, Mary. We're going to go to yes. Now the question is public employee pensions.
Okay, thanks for the question. I think that this is a really critical problem or critical issue, but I do want to be clear in my position, which is part of the bargain that you make becoming a public employee is the pension, is the earned benefit that you get. And so it would be very difficult for me to not support our retirees getting their pensions and our workforce. I think we need to look for, again, this is where I fall back on really my deep skill set of budgetary analysis and quantitative analysis to be able to do that sort of a deep dive. It's really a bargain that we make with our workforce in order to attract and retain people. And I think that it's really critical that we maintain that benefit. That may mean that, we need to look at potentially what is the cost share? What are other things we can do? But I believe that when we negotiate in good faith with our employees that they are going to get this benefit, it's incumbent upon us to do it. And I will also mention that a UC Berkeley Labor Center study recently showed that even given the education level, years of experience, Marin County is actually very underpaid compared to even comparable other counties locally. So it may feel like we're paying a lot, but compared to a lot of other places that frankly, they could leave to work, that's just not what the research shows. So I'd want to work collaboratively with organizations like COST to hear the concerns and look and see if there are things we can do. But I do feel very strongly that an earned benefit should continue to be earned.
Homelessness. You've raised the issue before, and let's go back to it. Homelessness is a top concern to many folks in Marin County and frankly, all around the state of California. What do you think the Board of Supervisors should do in regard to the homeless crisis that Marin County is experiencing, that aspects of Marin has? And what would you suggest that we should do that we're not doing now? Also, Project Home Key, there's a Project Home Key project that started up in near Marin General Hospital in Greenbrae. It's received much controversy. It hasn't opened yet. But I'm just curious what both of your opinion is on the Project Home Key and the Greenbrae example of Project Home Key. I think Mary started the last, so am I right? Gina, you're on.
I think I'm up first this time.
Okay, Mary, you're first, then Gina. Fair enough? There you go. Gina.
Oh.
Or Mary, excuse me.
Go ahead, Mary. Okay. So when it comes to Project Home Key, in particular the South Alesio project, I am incredibly proud of our Board of Supervisors for approving that project despite significant opposition. I think we can't talk about homelessness without talking about putting people in housing, and that is an opportunity with a site that can you provide people with housing so that we can provide wraparound services. This is an incredibly complex situation in question. We have Martin versus Boise, which says you can't move folks off of public property unless you have a unless you have a bed for them. And we also have, you know, what the CDC did during the pandemic, which didn't allow, you know, what had historically happened in Marin, which was moving people along and not allowing encampments to develop. So the landscape has changed drastically when it comes to homelessness. And I don't have all the answers, frankly. And I don't think there is one single answer. What I think we can do is partner with our cities and towns to find housing. I think permanent supportive housing is the theory and the model that works and has long-term results. Since 2017, we have housed over 400 people, and 90% of them have remained housed because of whole person care and permanent supportive housing. I could keep going, but I'll stop at a minute. Thank you.
Okay, so Project Home Key. I do support Project Home Key because I do agree with the Housing First model. I think that the only way to successfully keep someone off the street is to give them housing first. And then also everyone is unhoused for different reasons. And so there's not going to be a one size fits all for every person that's experiencing housing insecurity. So when I talk to practitioners, it's really about case management and making sure that the services that are provided are really tailored to the individual, because it really depends on that individual why they are unhoused. That being said, I think some mistakes were made with the most recent Project Home Key project. I think there a lot of people that were upset felt that there was a lack of transparency, a lack of information. I do support the project, but I think that there are lessons to be learned from that process, that we need to start the process of educating the public much earlier, even before we have an approved project, because especially as we're seeing more streamlining come from Sacramento, we need to over-communicate and over-engage the public, especially in cases where we aren't required to do so. That's how you build public trust. And then I'll also say in closing that in my conversations with other elected officials, Marin County is really an outlier in terms of providing permanent shelter, and not in a good way. We are one of the only counties in the entire North State that does not have a permanent shelter. And one of the first things I would do if elected is to try to remedy that, because I think it's time.
So our next question comes from one of the attendees tonight, who asks about housing and the impact on our tax base. And specifically, the question is that the lion's share of the RENA allocations for Marin are going to fall in District 1 with substantial increases in population. This person estimates as much as 50 to 100% if it all played out. Many of those might be nonprofits, which is to say not contributing to our tax base. So the question posed is, how will you handle the challenges of growth without a corresponding increase in the tax base, or where will the money come from?
I think I go first this time. It's an excellent question. I think that, you know, to be honest, until we know what the potential sites are after we go through the environmental review process, and until we have developers that are interested, it's going to be really difficult to say whether they're going to be nonprofits or not. What we do know is that a lot of these building sites in District 1 do fall into the Miller Creek School District and the high school district for Santa Rafael City Schools. And one thing that is really incumbent upon all of us is that we are pro housing in the school district, and we want to make sure that our teachers and families can live in our community. But because they're community funded districts, we would not get more revenue by having more kids attend our schools. It's actually a different funding model. So I just think as we look at the housing sites, as we are continuing to see how things play out, we just have to really be very thoughtful and have a lot of conversations at the neighborhood level with our city leaders, with our potential partners who are developers, because there's a lot of potential change coming. And so we need people with, frankly, the political courage to have a lot of conversations with different stakeholders and who have a track record of having those conversations and being able to hopefully find a middle ground that people can accept. And that's really what I bring. That was my role with Senator Feinstein. She even sent me to the Delta to talk about water. And I met with farmers and environmental groups, and there's basically nothing they agree on. So I'm not afraid to have a difficult conversation. And I think that's what we're going to have to do in some of these proposed housing sites.
Mary.
So I may challenge a few of the premises of that question as far as population growth and that it will all be built by nonprofits. I think, you know, I agree with Gina that we don't know until we see what projects are on the ground and proposed. And it's, you know, we plan. I've been knee deep in the RENA process over the last 6 months of looking at sites through all sorts of lenses through the RENA process. If we don't plan and have a housing element that's accessible, that is approved by HCD, Sacramento is going to dictate what's here. It's difficult. The numbers that the RENA process are proposing are astronomical, 19 times higher than they have been in this during prior cycles, excuse me. So how I would meet that is one, relationships with the community, but also with the developers to really work with them. And last night we had a forum with Responsible Growth Marin, and I point to them as a great community organization that has pushed on a developer in order to advocate for what the community wants. It's tough. It's a long process. It's painful, but it's necessary in order for the communities to have that say in what is developed. What sites we pick, throughout District 1, it is a lion's share, and Supervisor Connolly has been pushing back on that drastically, and where those housing sites, if we want to have an acceptable housing element, is a struggle. So we keep pushing back on that, but we don't want to not have an acceptable housing element.
Amy, another question from the reader, from the viewers?
I'm going to pass it to you for a second while I scan the queue.
Okay. I am going to ask you both to go back to homelessness for a second, Mary and Gina. California, I was just up at the old California State Hospital in the Sonoma Valley. It's been closed. It looks beautiful. It's empty. I talked to some folks in San Francisco, and they said, you know, many of our homeless folks have psychiatric needs. Why don't we create a 21st century model of California care at residential facilities similar to the state hospitals? What do you think, Mary? Gina, should we talk about reopening state hospitals in a 21st century humanitarian model? Mary.
Is that one to me? I love the notion. I love the idea. You know, we got away from state hospitals because of, you know, not of people's civil liberties and civil rights. And there's a lot that I agree with there. I mean, what I love the notion of 21st century psychiatric hospitals and places where people can really get the care that they need and they want. But institutionalizing people involuntarily is not something I agree with.
That's different from Governor Newsom's position that has come out recently where he's going to open care courts, isn't it?
I'm not familiar with his care court policy. I know that, you know, in Marin, we have a number of different kind of courts that are dealing with the situation that's in front of us. We've got some innovative judges in Health and Human Services. We have a Veterans Court. We have a court that really deals with, where there's the welcome center there to help people get through their quality of life infractions. And we're really trying on the court level to get people the treatment they need rather than, you know, punishment or for quality of life infractions.
Gina, the same questions regarding the potential of opening a 21st century care. And if you're familiar with the governor's recent proposal, which is that there would be courts, care courts that could sentence, could require people with the ACLU opposition, I would add, that could require people to receive mental health care. That's the governor's position, and it's become quite controversial. Your thoughts?
Yeah, thanks for the question. You know, I think this is really a challenging issue because on the one hand, you have the civil liberties of the individual. And of course, we all want to have ownership over our own being. But there are also a lot of cases where people, frankly, cannot have that. And it's very difficult when you know someone who has severe mental illness to actually, there's no way to really force them to have care. This is really front of mind for me today because UC Berkeley actually had a credible threat today. We were on lockdown for several hours.
Yeah.
My mom was in lockdown at the Hospital of Business because she was supposed to teach today. And it was a student in mental distress who had threatened to shoot up the school. He was an individual in mental distress, but there's not a lot you can do for someone when they're over the age of 18. So there does seem to be a needed balance on issues like this that really isn't there because right now we've really swung to only civil liberties. But I think we have to be really mindful of anytime we're taking away someone's civil rights, there has to be a really compelling reason to do it. And so that's where I stand on it. So care courts, again, I like Mary, I don't know a ton about it, but I do think that we've swung pretty far in one direction. It might be time to think a little bit about taking some steps the other way.
One of the transit functions in Marin County is SMART, the Sonoma Marin Transit Authority, Trans Area Transit. It's on a per capita basis, at least right now, one of the most expensive systems in the U.S. What's your thoughts about SMART? Where's SMART going? There's a SMART representative on the SMART board. SMART, your predictions and your suggestions. Let's start with Gina.
I think SMART is really an underutilized resource right now. As you said, the ridership has never been what we had hoped it would be when voters approved it. And I can tell you, my son went through a train phase, and so we rode SMART, it's a wonderful train. But I think there's a lot more that we need to do if we want to actually take advantage of having that connectivity. The thing that I would do as supervisor, I work with the UC Berkeley Institute of Transportation Studies. They actually work with transit agencies across the United States and have done a lot of post-pandemic modeling on the future of transit. I would love to invite them in and have them talk with SMART and try to figure out if there are innovative things we can be doing to increase ridership, change the model, because it's not really working right now. That's what's clear. And so I think we need to take a fresh look at it. I believe in the possibility of SMART, but I just don't think we've reached it.
Mary.
Thank you for the question. I am encouraged by the uptrends in numbers of ridership on SMART that we're seeing month over month. I'm also encouraged to read in the most recent staff report from SMART that they're planning for Sunday ridership to return and for 10 additional trips to return in this next budget cycle. And, you know, I think it's really one of those chicken and egg issues where we cut down trips during the pandemic because there weren't enough riders. But if there's not enough trips, people don't take it. I know somebody who rode it regularly into San Rafael said I was either going to get to work an hour and a half early or 6 minutes late. And that doesn't work for people, so they get in their cars. So listen, we've invested in the infrastructure. I want to see it succeed. I'm encouraged by the new executive director. I think he's bringing new, fresh insights from his experience in Salt Lake. And I'm cautiously optimistic. I think we need to look for solutions to our traffic congestion and for quality of life. And I'm really excited to see that we're planning the multi-use path along the train, that we're finally getting those planning steps in place as the voters were promised when it was initially passed. The planning funding just came into place from Civic Center to Smith Ranch Road, which I think is a really crucial component of that pathway.
I think Mimi has some questions, and if we do, we'll start with Mary as our first responder.
Okay. The next question has to do with the next round of the American Rescue Funds. which Mary touched upon briefly, but the question asks is to ask each of you to elaborate on how you would prioritize where the next round of spending goes. What are your top priorities, but also what's the process for figuring out what should rise to the top?
So, great question, and I really would rely on staff to come forward with some proposals. I do like the first tranche that came forward. I think we have to look in this county at our aging infrastructure, and it's not glamorous, and it's not exciting, and it's oftentimes not a priority. But we know that our infrastructure, from our pipelines to our buildings, so much of our infrastructure is hitting that end of life. And so I think we have to invest some of it into those sort of non-sexy projects, frankly. And then we also, because that's going to pay dividends down the line. I always look for the opportunity to prevent catastrophes and prevent cleaning up messes, which are much more expensive when pipes break then, and I give the example of pipes, because once they break, it's a much more expensive fix. So really looking at what are our one-time issues that need to be addressed and what are our infrastructure costs that need to be addressed and start at that spot.
Gina.
The process I go through, because these are one-time funds, they shouldn't be used for anything that is an ongoing funding source. So they shouldn't be used for ongoing staff. They shouldn't be used for, multi-year projects if there isn't sufficient funding. I think that we have to look really holistically at what are one-time investments that would have a huge impact. So some of the projects that immediately come to mind actually are in, and I also think we need to do it with an equity lens, because again, because we're Marin County, it's actually really hard for some of our communities, including the Canal neighborhood and Marin City, to access some of the state and federal programs, because the overall largesse of Marin makes them ineligible for some programs. So with that in mind, I actually think it's up to the county to help invest in those communities. So for example, in the Canal neighborhood, Pickleby Park is asking, with the Canal Alliance, is asking to do an all-weather turf field for their soccer field. Because right now they can't play soccer 60% of the year because they get flooding. That would be an easy lift and a good use of one-time funding. Another example from the Canal neighborhood is the lighting project. I spent some time down there learning about the intersections that have bad lighting and have led to crime and safety issues, and frankly also make it dangerous for the children to go to Bahia Vista, which is the local elementary school. In Marin City, there's a lot of flooding issues. There's water contamination issues. I would love for us to not only invest in the built environment, but also do it with an equity lens, and especially where there are not other federal or state resources that could be tapped into for these communities. I think we owe it to our residents to do that.
Yeah, thank you. Mimi, another question from viewers?
Yes. So this question is about traffic congestion, which used to be the top topic on people's minds before homelessness and housing came along. So San Rafael has particular unique issues relative to traffic. One of which is the SMART train, and the other one, of course, is the ongoing one, which is the 101-580 intersection. Do you have any thoughts as to whether there's anything that the supervisors can do that helps get traffic relief for San Rafael?
Gina, then Mary.
Yeah, well, I think this is really one of those issues that crosses a lot of jurisdictions, so it shouldn't just be up to the county to work this. But it should be up to the county to convene people. So convening Caltrans, convening the cities that are affected, convening the communities that are affected as well. One of the projects that's being proposed is on the Freitas Parkway. If anyone's gone to the farmer's market, you know exactly the intersection that I'm talking about. They're talking about putting a roundabout in, because right now people are actually required to walk to cross traffic in order to get to a bus stop. And there's a lot of issues with traffic accidents there. I think we, you know, this is really an issue where we need to work collaboratively, and we have to be able to work in tandem with each other. And also importantly, with the bipartisan infrastructure bill, the funding is starting to flow down to the state and then to the county. And so this is the time to make the investments to reduce traffic and frankly, to incentivize more public transportation, walkways, bikeways, so that people aren't as reliant on their cars and can safely use other modes of transportation.
All right.
So I'll just point out that the, you know, the roundabouts in city jurisdiction, the soccer field light and the lighting issues within the city are also within the city of San Rafael jurisdiction. So focusing on county jurisdiction, the 101-580, let's get it done. We've narrowed it down to three alternatives. Let's get it done. And the board does have a say, as all the board sits on the Transportation Authority of Marin. We're getting there. Let's get it built. Regarding San Rafael congestion, it's tough. And I was pleased to see in the last Smart Board meeting a significant presentation about trying to decrease the amount of time where the trains are overlapping and trying to decrease the arm down time for the Smart Train. I hope that will provide some relief. I also I see as a silver lining of the pandemic, the number of families on bikes, the number of people on bikes, electric bikes. I want to see the funded program to have electric rideshare bikes at our Smart stations. I want to see that start sooner rather than later. And I want those projects where people who want to get out of their cars can. Again, we're seeing the Smart ridership is going up, and a lot of those people are riding bikes on that first and last mile. Recognizing that not everybody can get out of their cars, but there is a good chunk of people who are doing that now. So let's make it safe so that if, you know, we've seen the Columbus Day studies on the Richmond San Rafael Bridge, if we can get 5% of the people out of their cars, we have a significant decrease in the amount of congestion. So let's get those people who want a bike doing that.
Next question, we'll start with Mary this time, and Gina, you'll have the second go at it. Should supervisorial candidates accept support from public employee unions or other entities, PACs, businesses, corporations that receive substantial payment from the County of Marin?
Can you state the first part of that question again?
Supervisor candidates accept support from public employee unions. And I'm talking about County of Marin employee unions.
Right. So from MAPE, MCMEA, et cetera.
Exactly.
You know, I think that the amount of endorsements that come from those agencies in comparison to the issues that they're negotiating for are not significant enough in order to really buy a decision one way or another. So that's my take on it. That being said, I have not accepted any dollars from any county labor organizations.
Gina.
Yeah, similarly, to the best of my knowledge, MAPE has not made any endorsements or contributions to date in this election cycle. I tell every organization that I meet with, even the ones that don't endorse me, I'm always someone who has an open door, because you can only be as smart on an issue as the stakeholders and the information you're getting. And so there's been a lot of organizations that for various reasons have endorsed me or haven't endorsed me, and I would give everyone a fair shake. So I don't see an issue with MAPE has not endorsed or given money, but I don't think that it would influence my decisions either way.
I think I'd like to jump in and expand that question. Having done a study a few years ago, looking at supervisors and where the larger contributions came to their campaigns, and particularly for incumbent supervisors, it's often folks that get money in one way or another from the county, whether it's their employees or contractors with the county or trade unions that do county type work and consultants. And so I'd just like to have you each answer that question a second time. What's your view of accepting campaign contributions from those entities, and do you?
This time we go to Gina and then Mary.
So I've been endorsed by 12 organizations to date, most of which have supported me at some level. So, you know, it depends on how you categorize it. You can look at my website to figure out if the ones that have supported me are included in that list or not. But I think it's really important to state again that, you know, my mentor in political life is really Senator Feinstein. And I try to look at all issues with open eyes. I do have values. I'm a values-based public servant. And so one of my core values is that I do think that workers are important. So that's the issue. I'm always going to think workers are important. But with that said, I don't think that, you know, accepting money definitely means that you're always going to vote a certain way. I think that it's important to be open to all viewpoints on every issue, because information changes and things change. So you have to be willing to listen and learn, and the situation can change on the ground.
Mary.
So I have not taken any voting pledges, and I have, you know, I'm very clear with anybody who supports me that I'm not making any promises or taking any trades in this campaign. I think if you look at our list of endorsers, you can see that there is a distinction there. And, you know, I am negotiating in this with the utmost transparency and clarity that I am here to represent the citizens of Marin. And I think representing the citizens of Marin also means representing the workforce of the county, of the Marin professional firefighters who have endorsed me, and many other labor organizations where our employees work. We deserve to treat them fairly. I think where there's sometimes an issue is, you know, do our labor organizations always speak for our employees? And so it's incumbent upon us to always ask that question to make sure that the spokesperson is always speaking for the employees. So when it comes to something like MAPE, I have relationships within county government with actual frontline employees across the organization and throughout management that are friends and colleagues who can really give a perspective on what is going on.
Mimi, another question from our listeners?
Yes, Q&A definitely got lively here. This is another question related to housing. And the questioner points out that the State Audit Commission has studied the RENA methodology and found it lacking. So if the numbers are wrong, is there something that the county should do? And if so, what?
Mary?
So I've seen that new information come in the last week, and I have not been able to perform. I mean, I know there was the Embarcadero study that many people questioned, but new auditor information in the last week or two. And I have not been able to make an independent assessment on the realities of that. I know that the county did challenge and appeal the RENA allocations, and that was denied, as did most of the cities and towns. And I also know we're on a pretty tight timeline in order to approve the housing element. So I see it as a both and. If there's an opportunity to challenge it, we should do it. But at the same time, we can't stop planning, or we're going to end up with by right development.
Gina.
It's a good question. I did read the stories about that study. The auditor in the state does really good work, very rigorous work, and often can lead to changed policy. The issue is, until Sacramento changes that policy, we still have to adhere to the lay of the land and to the current policy. So we have to approve the housing list. We have to go through the EIR process. And that's why I think as we're going through it, we have to make sure that we have people engaged in the process, so that whatever that final list of housing is, and even after it's approved, when developers start approaching, that we have real community level conversations about what the future of our community and what the housing might look like. Because until Sacramento changes what they're doing, we're sort of left with having to try to work our way through it and try to make sure that the things that we are building fit into the character of the county and also are sensitive to the environmental needs. But I think this is also important to have relationships in Sacramento. So if that's where a lot of this policy is coming from, it's really important for elected officials to have those relationships. And that's part of what I bring to the table.
Board of Supervisors takes a number of policies. You're both intimately familiar and follow this stuff. You're up to it. If you had to pick one issue in which the Board of Supervisors is going in one direction and you would suggest, no, stop, I'd like to suggest a different direction, what would you pick? Across the board, I don't care which field. And let's start with Gina. So where would you be different? Where would you come down different than the current orientation of the Marin County Board of Supervisors? That's my question.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a tricky one, and I hate to repeat myself, but I really think it has to do with a permanent shelter. To date, the county has not taken a leadership role on that, and I think it's really needed. So that is somewhere where I would be of a differing opinion.
Thanks, Gina. Mary, where would you take a different opinion from the current direction of the Board of Supervisors? Just one area.
Yeah, I would push back strongly on the fact that the county hasn't taken a leadership role on homelessness and permanent supportive housing, but that's not where I would focus. I think to me, it's public information. We have a great public information office, but throughout the organization, there's a lot of room for improvement. I think we oftentimes have engineers or technical people communicating with the public. And I oftentimes see that there's a disconnect in sort of wonky bureaucratic alphabet soup that doesn't translate to the community. So what I would like to see is a much more robust public information system throughout each of our departments so that we ensure continuous, frequent, and clear communications with the public across all level of government. We don't do a great job of telling the story of the good work that is being done.
The Board of Supervisors has a number of liaison appointments. Golden Gate Bridge District, MTC, Water Board, Air Board, all over the place, Smart Board. And determine which one you'd like would show a bit of your preference and your what your orientation would be. If you had a chance, forget about who occupies the seats at present. If you had a chance to occupy one, and you will have a chance to occupy one of those seats if you win, tell us which one or which two you would really like to do. Let's start with Mary.
So for experience level, MTC, Metropolitan Transportation Commission, is where I'm most familiar. I work with the leaders there and, you know, with their committees on a daily basis. And I love transportation. But if I pie in the sky request, the Coastal Commission would be, I think, fascinating.
Really? Great. Gina, same question.
I think my first choice would be ABAG, the Association of Bay Area Government, because I already know several members on that committee. And I think that having, all of the regional and connections that I have, I could really serve Marin County well in that position. And then because I think it probably has some of the biggest room for improvement, probably the SMART Board. I would really like to dig in and try to, because I think SMART, the vision of SMART is so great. And I would really like to see it better utilized.
We're starting to wind down right now. And so I'm going to go to Mimi and see if some of our viewers have a few questions that we'd like to wrap up with.
Okay, maybe two more. The first one is about fiscal responsibility. And this questioner asks, are there one or two areas where you think that the county hasn't done as good a job as it could, and what might you do differently?
Nina and Mary.
The one that comes to mind right away is the rental assistance program. I think it has been a disaster from start to finish. It was meant to serve our low-income families to allow them to pay rent. Instead, what happened happened is that there was roadblock after roadblock put in place of people being able to access that funding. And then the person in charge of that funding ended up stealing millions of dollars from it. So while they were preventing the people that needed the money from receiving that money, the person in charge of the program was actually taking the money from those people. And what happened after that was discovered, and that person, I think, is now facing legal charges. They actually made it even harder for people to access that funding because they said we didn't have appropriate controls in place. To me, that it just was a disaster all around. And it's the sort of thing that, again, I think as a board of supervisor, you are the voice of the people and you're the voice of the communities that need these programs to work. And so I would have liked to see more ownership and more, rolling up the sleeves to be able to work on that issue. I know a lot of community-based organizations tried and they just really felt like it did not get done.
Mary?
So kind of going back to some of my early points about the staffing issues, and I think one of the big losses in the county is through independent contractors. When we don't have the staff in the county building, we rely on independent contractors. And I see that, one, you don't build the institutional knowledge of people working on projects within their community, which then, you know, rolls over and benefits for the next project. But there's also, you know, just a loss of leadership and education and training when we outsource our work. So I would like to see us get to the appropriate staffing levels within the county and not rely on vacancies as a way to save money. I think it's short-sighted, and that I'd really like to see us do work in-house as appropriate.
Thanks, Mary. Mimi, last question from our good viewers.
Yes. So the last question is, how long should a supervisor serve and why? And do you think you should commit to a maximum number of terms that you would serve?
Mary and Gina.
I don't have an answer to this one, so I'm going to wing it a little bit. But, you know, I think 8 years, 12 years maximum, frankly. I think, you know, what we try to, 4 years oftentimes isn't enough to get all the way up to speed and then execute. I would say, you know, a term limit at 12 would be reasonable.
Thanks, Mary. Gina.
I think that, first of all, I believe in the concept of having new people come in periodically. I think that's really healthy for government, and people that are new can see things that people that have been there a long time can't always see. So I do think that it's important to have sort of fresh eyes every once in a while. For me, you know, I'm really looking at, you know, I want to have tangible results by the time my kids are in high school. So they're 3 and 5 right now. So that's about 12 years from now. It's going to happen before I know it. But that's really the benchmark I'm setting. And I want to be able to point to specific things that I've been able to accomplish. That's really important to me. And so I want to move with urgency as well, because if you only have so long, you better get it done.
It looks like we have a consensus of 12 years, which coincidentally was the
let's pass it.
When the grand jury looked at the issue, that was what their conclusion was. So 12 years, 3 terms. Okay, you each have had a wonderful opportunity to answer some great questions, and you've done a great job. But now you have to tell us, the voters of the First District, why they should elect you to the Marin County Board of Supervisors. We said a minute and a half, but we've got a little time here, so let's make it 2 minutes for each of you. Gina, start off. Mary, you have the honor of making your summation first.
Well, first and foremost, thank you, Dick. Thank you, Mimi. Thank you, Alan. I really believe in democracy and appreciate this opportunity, the questions and the time. And I appreciate the 50 plus people who've shown up to learn more about this race. It's important and means a great deal. Oops, it looks like my video was stopped by the host. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'll just keep talking. You know what I look like. So I am in
my fault. I meant to take Gina off and put you on. There we go.
Okay. So I am endorsed by the majority of the Board of Supervisors. I'm endorsed by Rachel Kurtz, who's the council member representing much of District 1. And we have a great relationship and an ability to get things done. I'm endorsed by Andrew McCullough. I'm really proud to be endorsed by our former mayor, Al Borrow, who I've had an opportunity to sit down with at Aldersley over the last several months to really get to know and pull from his wisdom. I'm pleased to be endorsed by the Marin Association of Realtors, the Marin Women's PAC, the Marin County Women Lawyers, professional firefighters, and many Marin organizations. I ask that you take a look at my website, which is sackettforsupervisor.com. I think you will all see many community leaders on that list. And all of those people I work with or have worked with, have done projects with, and have relationships with. And please take a minute to watch my campaign video, which really shows you a lot about my feelings on business economic development and what we need to do in the coming years. I would love to earn your support in this District 1 race for county supervisor. Thank you for your time.
Mary Sackett, thank you for your time. And Gina Daly, and thank you for running. Mary and Gina as well, to you for putting yourself out and putting yourself before the voters. Gina, give us your summation. Why should Gina Daly be the new supervisor in the First District?
Yeah, well, I've led a life of service. This is really, I've always chosen positions in my career based on impact. And what I see really right now with this position of to be a full-time public servant as a Board of Supervisor is that we have an opportunity, given all of the tumult and change that has happened in the past 2 to now 3 years, to actually make lasting change, make durable solutions to the issues facing our county. But we need to have leaders that both have a track record of accomplishing hard things, but also the political courage to do it. I am someone who thinks we, as much as we need Marin solutions, we also need to be looking outside of ourselves for new ideas. And so I want to be that person for Marin County. I am very happy to have a bunch of endorsements. I have a lot of San Rafael elected officials that have endorsed me, including our former mayor, Councilmember Mary Beth Bushy, as I said. You can also go to my website, Gina Daly, the number 4, marinsupervisor.com. I really focused on having the people that support me be the people that the voters of San Rafael have already supported. And I think it's also really telling that all the people that have served with me in a capacity, whether it's on the Miller Creek School Board, the San Rafael School Board, former Mayor Gary Phillips, who appointed me to the Wildfire Prevention Committee, they're all supporting me because they've seen what I can do and that I bring a lot of common sense and skills to this role. So I encourage you to check out my website, and I hope that I will have your support on June 7th.
It's a great pleasure. So, thank you both.
Gina and Mary, for participating in this event and helping make sure that people are educated before they vote. Just a few little housekeeping. Oh, before I get to housekeeping, I want to thank Dick for generously donating his time and for moderating a lively discussion as always in your in an inimitable way. And thank you, Alan Shavitz, for serving as our exceptionally capable webinar administrator. And thank you all for attending. And I think Alan's going to put up our little closing slide here.
And Mary, maybe we've got to remind him about next Monday.
We're going to. Okay, I'm going to remind them while hoping that Alan's going to put up our closing slide here. But so I want to remind you that we have a Novato supervisor candidate at this same time and place next Monday, the 25th. You need to register again at costmarin.org. To participate in that event, which we hope you will. And then as far as final housekeeping, I want to point out that your donation is really essential to our ability to host events like this. We're pretty much an all-volunteer organization. So if you go to our website, costmarin.org, look for the donate links on the homepage. That would be super helpful. And finally, I want to tell you that there will be a video available of this event posted within 24 to 48 hours after tonight. And you can find it again at our homepage. and click on video. So with that, thank you all for joining us and hope to see you on Monday night. Have a good night.
Good night.
Thank you.